obviously that are sick tonight. James is out, and the kids are out, and a whole bunch of folks. Randy's coming, so he's not sick then. Okay, that's good news. If I wanted to read a passage, David, if I wanted to read a passage that says there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof is death, where would I find it? There are two. No, it's an Old Testament text. There you are. 14. Somebody help him out. 14, 12, and 16, 25. We get those mixed together sometimes. If I wanted to study about Adam and Eve, if I wanted to study about Cain and Abel, where would I turn? Emily? Yes, if I wanted to look at a New Testament passage that speaks of the faith of Abel, where would I turn? Sarah? Okay. And verse 4, you've got it. If you can get the chapter, you're there. Hebrews 11, verse 4. Little David, if I wanted to read a text that tells me about King Uzziah, where would I turn? Second Chronicles 26, verse 16. You're there. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Katie? Where is it? No. Whatever you do in word or deed. Somebody help her. Colossians 3:17. Yes. Why call you me Lord, Lord, Betty Jo, and do not the things which I say? Yes. Somebody help her out. Terry? 46. Luke 6:46. Yes. 46 is the one. Luke 6:46. If I wanted to read a passage where Jesus said, all authority hath been given unto me in heaven and on earth, Jonathan, where would I find it? Pardon me? 18? I thought you said Matthew 28:28. I was getting ready to say Matthew 28 don't have that many verses. If I wanted to read a passage that identifies the church as the pillar and ground of the truth, Joey, you're sitting there looking awfully innocent. Where is it? The church is the pillar and ground of the truth. Somebody help him out. Church is the pillar and ground of the truth. Randy? That's it. If I wanted to read a passage that limits the authority of the elders to the flock of God which is among you, where would I turn? Little David. No? Joey? All right, 1 Peter 5, 1 and 2. Now that leads us into our study. We're talking about the autonomy of local churches. The word autonomy means what, Carolyn? Self-rule, that's right. We've talked about areas in which the church may not exercise that. It does not have the authority to legislate law. But we are talking about areas where the church has not only the authority, but the obligation to make its own decisions. One of the things that we emphasized in our study last time in the matters or in the realm of judgment or expediency. Now, we've talked about expediency. A matter is not authorized by simply saying, well, it's expedient. We first must establish the authority for the work in one of three ways. How do we do that?
Direct man, apostolic, necessary inference,
approved apostolic examples. Those three. Now, our point being, if one establishes authority for a particular work, then there are judgments to make. Now that falls under whether or not it's general authority or specific authority. If it is general authority, then we've got some judgments to make. We've got realms of expediency that we have to explore.
I just wanted to clarify. The three realms all fall under the one umbrella We're looking to the Word of God for the authority.
Well, the authority of Christ. Jesus said, all authority, as we've mentioned, belongs unto me in heaven and on earth. Now, to cut it down to one or two, we see in Matthew 21, what's it say? Verses 23 through 27.
Not everyone who says to me, Lord,
Lord. No, that's Matthew 7, 21. Matthew 21, 23 through 27. The question was asked of the Lord. Now, that's the foundation of our study.
By what authority?
That's right. Go ahead with it.
The authority of men or the authority of heaven?
That's right. By what authority doest thou these things? Jesus was asked that question by the leaders of the Jews. And he responded with a question. The baptism of John. Whence was it? From heaven or from men? And of course, they reasoned among themselves and said, if we say of heaven, then he'll say, why didn't you believe him? Now, why do you suppose they reasoned that way? What was the purpose of John and his baptism?
His purpose was to point out that Jesus was the Christ, the Messiah that they've been expecting for 1,000 years.
That's right. So if we say that John baptized by the authority of heaven, Jesus will say, why didn't you believe what he said? But if we say that John baptized by the authority of men, we fear the multitudes, for all hold John as a prophet. Now, do you think they knew which one it was? Well, they had seen the miracles. There's no doubt they understood whether or not John baptized by the authority of heaven or not. The evidence was there. And so to ask Jesus, by what authority do you do these things, that becomes the foundation of this whole study. Now, once authority has been established as being from direct statement, proved apostolic example, or a necessary inference, and, of course, respect for the silence of God. Now, I want to hammer this point home. We're going to drive this a little further in our next study regarding, Terry, we've been talking about this, when are New Testament examples binding? Whenever you hear somebody say, Jonathan, as we heard the other night, whenever you hear somebody say, well, this idea of direct statement, approved apostolic example, and necessary inference, that's just a man-made system of interpretation. You need to watch. Flags ought to go up. Because somebody is about to suggest something, if they haven't already, or to endorse something they can't read in the Bible. The Bible teaches us in one of those three venues. That's how we communicate with each other. If you want to know what I want you to do as a, let's say, a boss at the job, what would I do? I would tell you what to do. Or I would show you what to do. Or there would be conclusions, or a conclusion that you would draw about what I wanted you to do by the facts and data that was given. Now, that's the way we communicate with one another. We're foolish to think that God doesn't communicate with us that way. Once authority has been established for a practice, we determine, is it general authority or is it specific authority? We've talked about these things. When Jesus said, go teach, did he tell them how to go? Did he give them any indication about how to go? Not even a hint. But we see them going in all kinds of different ways. So we learn that the means of travel was a matter of generic authority. Now it becomes a matter of expediency. If you wanted to go to Kentucky to preach the gospel, it'd sure be a long walk. Now, it would be more expedient if you took an airplane or rode a bus or a train. Here you've got choices that are to be made. Now, in our application regarding local church autonomy, there are some decisions that each local congregation must make for themselves. Now, in the selection of the messengers, we've talked about the work of the church in the realm of benevolence, how that churches sent to other churches. And in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, we see evidence of the churches of Galatia, and in particular, the churches of Achaia, and in particular, the church at Corinth, selecting their own messengers. This was consistent with the teaching of the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, in verses 1 and 2. And Joy, again, I don't want to just assume these things. Would you read that for me, please? 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1, 2, and 3. We want to note that these local churches had the authority to select their own messengers.
1 Corinthians
16, 1, 2, and 3. Whomever you approve. These local churches were selecting their own messengers. Again, you see further evidence of that in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Now, I want to point out just here, listen carefully. You know, sometimes when you engage in discussions about these kind of things, you hear some of the most foolish arguments. We know that the Apostle Paul traveled from Macedonia down into Achaia at Corinth, and from there he took this contribution from the sending churches to the church in Jerusalem. We have evidence, overwhelming evidence of that. In discussing some of these things with some back east, the argument had been made that the Apostle Paul and those who traveled with him as messengers of the churches constituted a board of directors, and Paul was the chairman of the board. Now that kind of argument was to advance the idea of an institutional practice where you had a chairman and a board of directors overseeing a particular work and churches then sending to that board of directors who then in turn engaged the work. Now that's a foolish argument. We understand that. But that's the kind of argument sometimes you meet in these discussions.
It was more like they were a postal service and he was the postmaster.
Exactly. The problem with the other argument is it puts that group of people as legislators. Now we know when we put an envelope in the mail, the postal system has no authority over the contents except to deliver it. If you write a letter or if you put money in an envelope and you send that somewhere, Betty Jo, let's suppose you're paying some bill and you put the money in the envelope and you mail that thing. Do the people at the United States Post Office have the right to open your envelope and say, well, look at here, there's $300 in here. It's to go for this particular payment. So what I think I'll do is I'll take out 100 and I'll use it over here. I'll take out 100 and over here and 100 over there. Now what's wrong with that? The postal system doesn't have that kind of authority. All they have the authority to do as a messenger is to deliver from point A to point B. Now that's not a hard concept, is it? But it seems to be a hard concept for those who want to practice the practice of institutionalism. That is, to arrange some kind of board of directors overseeing some kind of a centralized organization to do the work of the local church. Joey?
That really constituted a board of directors. And why don't we see them identified as such in the scriptures? It's
well, you just don't, but that becomes an argument. It just becomes an argument that's foolish to justify a practice in which we've already engaged. Now, one of the things, young people, I want you to listen carefully to this. You watch and be careful. You watch and be careful when some begin a practice and then go to the Scriptures to try to justify the practice. The Scriptures don't teach anything in afterthought than they did before. The pattern is the same. And if we begin a practice and then we want to go to the Scriptures to try to justify the practice, something's wrong. We've got the order all backwards. We need to practice what the Scriptures teach, and they've been teaching the same thing a long time. So we need to remember that. Don't be deceived by folks who want to begin a practice and then try to justify it by what the Scriptures teach. You start with what the Scriptures teach. Now, that's a little bit of an aside. I want to go back to our point just here. The local church autonomy. It has the authority in matters of judgment or expediency to make its own decisions. It has the authority to oversee its own work. Joey?
And the decisions that one congregation would make don't necessarily have to be the same decisions in areas of expediency or judgment that another congregation might make.
Well, it's made irrelevant of another congregation,
right,
completely
right.
Independent.
It don't have to be the same thing. For example, the commandment is to sing.
All right.
Okay? Church A could use songbooks.
True.
Church B might have no songbooks, but put the lyrics up on that overhead projector.
That's right.
And Church C might elect to just memorize the
lyrics. That's right.
And the reason that those three can do those different things is because God has not specified.
Well, that deals with specific authority and generic authority. That's right.
So each congregation would be free to choose whichever method or expedient.
That's right.
To employ to obey the commandments.
And when they're using the board, when they're memorizing, or they have songbooks, they're doing nothing more or less than singing.
Right.
Now, that's a key element. They've not added to, they've not taken away. Now that's the difference between specific and generic authority, and that becomes fundamental. We've got to know that. Sometimes we're looking for specific authority for a practice when it is authorized generically. And if we're doing that, we're binding the rope tighter than what God made it. And so we need to be careful on both sides of that. A local church has the responsibility, the obligation, the independence and autonomy to oversee its own work. We've noted these passages, and they're on your list of passages to remember. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2, someone read it. that we are to tend the flock of God which is among you. That is, elders are to attend the flock of God which is among you. The Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20, in verse 28, were told the same thing, to oversee the flock over which they had been appointed. Why, sure.
Because that's how we do it.
Yeah, we've got independence here. And we've got limitations placed on the authority of elders. And they can't overstep the bounds. Autonomy of local churches is fundamental and foundational to this matter of institutionalism and the sponsoring church kind of arrangement. Now, if we're going to try to validate those things, we've got to go to some passage to begin with. But if we find some passage, which you won't, but if you find some passage you think teaches that, you have to harmonize it with these, which you can't, you see. Now, there's the problem. Randy?
An extension of what Joey said, one church can't tell another church, you should be doing it this way. At the same time, one church can't tell another church, you're doing it wrong.
Now, let's back that up just one step and talk about it a little bit. Can one preacher tell another church you're doing it wrong?
Absolutely.
That's his job.
Yeah.
That's his responsibility. Yes, sir.
When the elders of one church can't call the elders of another church
No.
and say, you're doing it all wrong.
No. No, we have no authority to do that. Now, when somebody asks your opinion about something, you can just qualify that. You know, here's what I can suggest to you. I have that happen, and Terry and I have had that happen a number of times, when someone from another congregation asks us a question. Does that mean we can't answer it? Are we violating local church autonomy when we do?
No. The right answer is, here's what the book, chapter, and verse says.
That's exactly right.
Has nothing to do with my opinion about anything.
That's exactly right. Here's what the Bible says about that. In fact, I got such a call even this afternoon, somebody asking some things. I said, well, here's what I believe about that, and here's the passage that teaches that. And so we had a little discussion about that kind of thing. Now, this was somebody in another congregation. But I didn't go to the other congregation as an elder of this congregation and say, now here's what you do. Can't do that. You see, we have no, and we use the word commonly in our judicial system, jurisdiction. We have no authority to operate in that realm of the decisions of another congregation. Preachers may preach. Elders may preach. But we don't have the authority to make the decision and to impose it upon them. Got to. That's what it says. Now, another point I want us to see regarding local church autonomy. A local church has the authority, the responsibility, the obligation to control its own resources. And we've studied in Philippians chapter 1. I want you to open your Bibles there again as Paul mentions the work that the church at Philippi had engaged in the beginning of his preaching in the province of Macedonia. If you'll notice in Philippians chapter 1, reading beginning at verse 3. Open your Bibles. Let's look at this. Philippians chapter 1, verse 3. If you don't have a Bible, there's one in the pew nearby, I'm certain. If not, you raise your hand. We'll get one. Philippians chapter 1, verse 3. Paul says, I thank my God upon all my remembrance of you, always in every supplication of mine, on behalf of you all, making my supplication with joy. Well, why is he thankful? In verse 5, for your fellowship in furtherance of the gospel from the first day until now. Well, let's pause there. Paul said that he had fellowship with those in Philippi from the first day even until now. Paul says, as he writes this epistle, he's in a Roman prison. But if you'll turn to the fourth chapter, we see what that fellowship was. Again, look at your Bible. Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4. And if you'll notice, beginning at verse 14, Philippians chapter 4, verse 14. Paul writes, howbeit ye did well that ye had fellowship with my affliction. And ye yourselves also know, ye Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church had fellowship with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but ye only. For even in Thessalonica, ye sent once and again unto my need. Let's pause there. Who made the decision for the church at Philippi to have fellowship with Paul in the preaching of the gospel? Was it the elders at Ephesus that decided that for them? Well, who made that decision? Ye Philippians, that local church, they made that decision. What they would do with their resources. Paul writes to the church in Corinth regarding this collection. Paul's desire was that when he came with these brethren, even from Macedonia, that he would not be disappointed. But who was it that made the decision whether or not the church in Corinth would send to the needy brethren in Jerusalem? Who made that decision? Alright, well, whomsoever ye shall approve. Paul says, these are approved by you. You made the decision. You determine how much you'll send. You determine who your messengers will be. And you determine the work that you will do with your resources. Now that's a responsibility that each local church has. We can't surrender that to someone else. Now we're heading there when we talk about the loss of autonomy. Now, as we examine some of these things, we've seen that there are a host of things that become the responsibilities of local churches to decide without turning that decision over to somebody else. For example, providing for the needy among its own. There have been occasions when we have had needy among ourselves. This local congregation determined how much and when and so forth that a contribution would be made to that needy family. We didn't surrender that to the church in Phoenix to do that. We didn't surrender that to the church in Buenaventura to do that. We have the authority to do that, and we see that illustrated by approved apostolic example in Acts chapter 2, 4, and 6. Randy?
And an extension of what you were saying, we also didn't contact headquarters in, St. Louis, Missouri and say, can we get some money so we can help this family?
Well, that is true, because the Lord's church doesn't have a headquarters except in heaven. That's where the head is quartered. And we've got to remember that there is no earthly headquarters. Now that contrasts, of course, to many denominational religions. We've looked at these passages, providing for the needy among saints elsewhere, some other congregation. Who makes the decision as to what we will send and how much, and to whom we will send it? We do. This local church makes those decisions. Again, we see that taught by approved apostolic example. And we've studied these passages in detail. Acts chapter 11, 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. And in particular, Romans the 15th chapter, beginning at verse 25, when he tells them where he's taking it to. And we have studied in the realm of edification. In Ephesians the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 11 through verse 16, that God has so equipped the church to build up itself in love. Who selects the material that we're going to study? Who selects how we're going to arrange into classes or whether we're going to bring everyone into this class? Who makes those kind of decisions that are pertinent to the work of edifying the church here? We do. We don't surrender those decisions to someone else. But you see, unfortunately, in our studies, we have noted that there are many who do. Now, understand this point. Autonomy may be lost. Read this carefully. When a congregation's right of self-government, as it pertains to discipline, to matters of expediency, to the use of its own resources, to its work, to its relief programs, that is, and I don't particularly like the word program, but to the relief that it sends to saints in other places, or to any other matter that pertains to the work of that local church, when that work is taken over by another congregation, or taken over by some human institution, and by that I mean some middle organization outside the realm of a local church, then autonomy is lost when it is taken by another congregation or another organization. Church autonomy is lost. Now I want you to look at the same statement, but insert, if you will, the expression willingly surrendered. Now it's important, brethren, that we see a congregation does not have to exist in some kind of power takeover in order to lose local church autonomy. It may willingly give that up. For example, as we think about the work of evangelism, we see the New Testament pattern. This chart is not new to you. You've seen it time and time and time and time again. And I want you to learn this chart to the extent you can draw the circles and the arrows. It's a very good teaching tool to help folks see what the work is of a local church. We see this church working in the realm, or these churches working in the realm of evangelism. We see that the church is described as the pillar and ground of the truth. That looks familiar to you, doesn't it? That passage? We see that the church at Corinth was addressed by the Apostle Paul that it is ordained that those who preach the gospel are worthy to be supported of the gospel. God arranged that. And we see that illustrated in a number of texts. For example, in Philippians chapter 1, as we read in verses 1 through 3, and Philippians chapter 4, they sent directly to the preacher. We've seen illustrated a plurality of churches sending to a local preacher. We can read about that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 in verses 8 and 9. Paul said, I robbed other churches, plural, taking wages of them that I might not be burdensome unto you. Is that important? I robbed other churches, taking wages of them. You see, Paul didn't take benevolence in order to live. He took what he called wages, but who did he take it from? Other churches. Now observe. Go ahead.
Other churches that were giving it to him.
Other churches that were sending it to him. Now that's right. They were not sending it to a sponsoring church who then in turn sent it to him. They were not sending it to some kind of missionary arrangement that was then sending it to him. But I want you to look on the board on this side. That's precisely what has occurred. Historically, here's what's been done. Now you see a difference in this side of the chart and this side, and the difference that you see is this thing right here in the middle. Yes, Roy?
The difference between the two.
Okay.
This,
okay. Same difference as far as the chart is concerned.
The main goal, God's main goal for us is to further the word.
Well, that's true. And what we have over here called evangelism is this organization, when it receives the funds from the churches, it makes the decision what preachers will be selected. It makes the decision what field of work they will go into. And so what we have now is a surrendering of these sending churches to this organization.
I totally understand, but I was just wondering the difference.
Yeah. No relevant difference at all. No relevant difference at all. We could over here put the word evangelist and come out just as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the point. Randy?
The only thing is, over on the right, there's usually more than one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this just illustrated. Yeah. 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 When this thing, and of course there's more than three over here too, but when this thing kind of blows up, this organization is the one that controls who preaches where and how much. Now, you see that this was not a power takeover. Here churches are surrendering that portion of their work to either a missionary society or a sponsoring church kind of arrangement. There wasn't a takeover. They surrendered that. Now in the realm of benevolence, we've studied these very things. We've studied how that the church at Jerusalem in Acts 2, 4, and 6 took care of the needy among themselves. They were making their own decisions relative to that. They were exercising local church autonomy. We see that, don't we? Daryl?
Well, what you're really clear about, I think we're going to ask you on the last chart, that it's not that they ended up selling it to other churches, but that they were going to be used for evangelism. The fact that they decided whatever it could have been to make a parking lot.
Right, for another congregation. Whatever it is. Point being, this organization doesn't have any right to exist, much less make decisions for somebody else. And same thing here. Here we see local churches doing their own work. Whether they're sending to other churches or whether there are a plurality sending to one church, as we have illustrated with these passages. But each local church made its own decisions. Now here we have an arrangement where local churches sent money to a benevolent society or a sponsoring church, that then this organization was responsible for what benevolent work was done. They made the decisions. Now I want to ask you, was this a power takeover or did these local churches surrender that portion of their work to someone else? They surrendered it. Now you no longer have autonomy. Peggy? Okay. And you've got the same thing as we talk about the work of evangelism. I'm sorry, edification. We see that the church is sufficient to build up itself. But here we find in practice several local churches engaged in sending money to a sponsoring church arrangement or sending money to a college. And then the college does the work, or the sponsoring church does the work of building up and edifying. These churches have lost their autonomy, in that they have surrendered it to someone else.
Go back vacation one time, the church we were worshiping with went after they had the collection on Sunday morning. Then they had a special collection after that for a woman's shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, it's an interesting end around.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A special collection.
Yeah.
His first collection was the church, and then the second collection was for the women's shelter.
I thought all of them were special.
Good.
Yeah. Roy?
Just a comment on that. And the problem is it's not specified to do that. And I can see where people look at what we're talking about, like we're over the top.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to help someone.
I want to comment on that. You know, over the years, this has been an argument that has been advanced, that we're just talking about how. You know, we're just fussing about how the work is done. After all, the work is good, and we're talking about how to do it. And so we just disagree on the how. Now, I want you to look at these charts. It's not a matter of how. You see, we got all the letters in there, but we got it spelled wrong. This is a different who. Does everybody see that? It's a different who. We've surrendered the work that we're to do to someone else to do it. They're going to have to use the same means and methods or select those that we would select. We just surrendered the autonomy to a different who. Now that's the issue. I want to say something more about it being a good work. Terry?
Yeah. As an example, you might illustrate that for us. Probably the classic example of all of that is years ago, the Herald of Truth arrangement.
Well, that was one of the beginning points, yes. At least in more recent history. Yeah. What happened, Roy, back in those days, in the probably mid-50s, I guess, is where this thing kind of began to kick off. The Abilene Church of Christ, the Highland Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas, decided that we want to have a radio program and we want to broadcast all over the United States or as far as we can. But the problem was, you see, they didn't have the money to do that. It cost a lot of money to have a radio program and, of course, broadcast that widely. And so what they decided to do was, we will send out notices to all kinds of churches across the nation, and we will invite them to send us money so that we can have this broadcast. Now, what happened? Here we've got a radio broadcast. Who's sponsoring it? The Highland Church in Abilene, Texas. Who's paying for it? Other churches are sending to this one, who in turn then do the evangelizing. Now, what have we created? We've created this right here. Now, who makes the decisions about what's preached? Where it's preached? Do any of these sending churches have any part or parcel in making those decisions? No. They have surrendered that portion of their work to this organization in the middle. Now, that's applicable to every one of these charts, whether it be benevolence, edification, or evangelism. It's applicable to every one of them. Don't let me forget about a good work. I want to come back to that. Randy?
You can get to it right now.
I want to get to it before I forget it. You know, sometimes we look at all these projects, whether it be preaching or whether it be, as you pointed out, a women's home or an old age home or whether it be a hospital or any of these things, and we look at that and say, well, that's really a good work. And one of the things we have to be careful about, and young people, listen carefully to this, it's a classic hole to fall into, and you don't want to fall into that hole. People say, well, this is a good work, and we look at this thing and we say, well, yeah, it's got to be good. And so we can support it. Churches can support it because, after all, you know, it's good work. Now, David, there was a passage over here that we were talking about from Proverbs 14:12, Proverbs 16:25. What does that say?
This way it seems right to a man
that ends. All right, it looks right. Looks like it couldn't be wrong. Some translations use the word good. It seems good. Seems right. But the end thereof is death. Now, I want you to read for me, Roy, a passage found in Ephesians chapter 2, and read for me verse 10. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. Let's ask the question in preface while you're turning to it, who decides what is a good work? Read the passage.
For we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them.
How do I know what is a good work? Do I have the authority just to decide because it pleases me that it's a good work? Who decides that? How do I know what he's decided? He's already revealed it right there in that little electronic thingy bob right there. You see. He knows that. He's already determined it. Revealed it right there, you see. All right, we've got Peggy, Bruce, and then Joy.
I can think of a more recent example. this brought up Herald of Truth, a more recent one that I can remember was the One Nation Under God comic book from the Cookeville Church of Christ.
Yeah, some of you may not have any knowledge of that. I remember that.
I've seen it.
I have too. In fact, I think I have one.
Yeah. Yeah. Book, chapter, and verse, but yeah. It's the method they used to try to get it out. Our church,
organization.
Our
it was the organization.
Our congregation up in Washington got this, along with a request to send them money.
I have all the letters, or most of them, in my office.
What they wanted to do, their whole thing was to get a copy of this in every household in the United States.
That's right. I have the letters. Yeah. Let's make a distinction and be careful in the use of our terms. It wasn't means and methods. It was a different who.
Yeah.
We've got now a sponsoring church kind of arrangement. So we've surrendered that portion of our local church autonomy to somebody else to do it for us when we participate in that. Bruce, Joey, and David, and Randy. I'm not done yet, guys. Oh, yeah. Remember that.
The Million Man March is really appalling because you had so-called evangelical Christians that came together to do one thing. But that one thing was up under the Elijah Muhammad. And so they surrendered all of what they had for Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was really, really sad. So when you see something like that, there was nothing good.
Let's not forget that when a local church surrenders the decisions that God obligates it to make to somebody else to make, local church autonomy is lost. Period. I forget. David or Joey, one of you.
Just to follow on to your point about the mindset that people are employing, they say, but it's a good work. It's a good thing. As soon as you give in to that being for doing something, the sky's the limit.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot justify anything you want to do just by reasoning yourself that it's a good work.
That's true.
Now, if the sky's the limit, you can do anything you want, then you've taken the whole concept of the Bible being an authority and thrown it out the window.
That's where we started with this study.
Anymore, if we're deciding
That's
for
right.
ourselves, what is a good thing?
That's right. David? Exactly right. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. There we are. Exactly right. Now, here's your domino effect. You can see the wisdom of God's plan for each local church to make its own decisions. If this church makes decisions for these, and these make decisions for these, then as you say, the sky's the limit. Now, let me just draw a picture of it. Let's suppose in the realm of evangelism that Church A surrenders its autonomy to Church B in the realm of evangelism, but it maintains its autonomy in the realm of edification and benevolence. If it can surrender its work of evangelism or any part of it to another local congregation, by what rhyme or reason would you argue that it could not surrender its work of edification and benevolence to another local church as well? Now, let's just pursue that, David. You brought up the point, and it's up here, and it's a good point. Let's pursue it. If a local congregation can surrender any part of its work to another congregation, then why can't it surrender all of its work to another congregation. All right. Now let's take it another step. If one church can surrender all of its work to another congregation, then why can't every congregation surrender its work to this same congregation? Now, wouldn't that follow? Now, isn't that what Roman Catholicism is? That's it, cut and dry. That's Roman Catholicism. Denominationalism, but in particular, that's Roman Catholic Church, cut and dried. It began in Rome. You've got the feelers coming out. You've got other feelers coming out. And everything reports to Rome. Now, that's how Roman Catholicism got started, David. That's exactly how. It wasn't this massive move to say, well, we'll create another religion. No. What it was the elevation of men ultimately over other churches.
And if a mandate or edict blows down from that top congregation that's erroneous, then that error spreads to all the other.
That's churches. Right. Here you've got the domino effect. You ever play dominoes?
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens.
And if each church does what it should do and retains autonomy, if one church goes bad or goes south, then it falls, but the others are not affected.
That's right.
Damage has been minimized.
That's right. Now you see the wisdom of God's plan. That's it in a nutshell. Randy and then Richard.
I wanted to focus again on the good works. You know, God specified in the passage that we just read in the Ephesians that God has told us what these good works are. But he also hasn't taken the realm of judgment out of our hands. And in other words, we're trying to divide the work of the church and the work of the individual. If I want to take my money and give it to an orphan's home, I can do that.
Sure you can.
I can make a judgment call and say, you know, I've looked into this, I've read about what they do, and I like what they do, and I can do that. There's no sin in that. That's what I'm trying to get across. Is that just because God hasn't specifically said, you may not support orphan's homes. He didn't say that to me.
Well,
He said that to the church. Indirectly, because he said, here's what you should use your money for.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is the Lord's money and my money.
Yeah. Well, we understand the distinction, and we had a lesson on the individual and the church. And that's illustrated, I think, very well in Acts, the 5th chapter, concerning Ananias and Sapphira. When you had a piece of land, wasn't it yours?
Yeah.
When you sold it, was not the money in your power? But now what have you done? You've lied about it, saying that you've given it all to the church. Well, we see a difference. It was theirs. And here's what belongs to the church. We see a distinction in that. But I wanted to comment just briefly. We want to be careful about how we word things, because sometimes how we word things can be misleading. And when we say, well, God, you know, hasn't told the church, thou shalt not do this. He didn't have to. What he said was, do this. And you made that point, but I want to clarify that. He doesn't have to go down the laundry list and say, don't do this and this and this. He doesn't have to go down the laundry list and say, well, don't engage in this kind of middleman operation. If you do, you'll lose your autonomy. Here's what he said do. And when we look at these charts, it becomes evident. Here's what he said do. And any deviation from that amounts to nothing less than a forfeiture of our local church autonomy. It is. And if we can surrender any part of it, we can surrender all of it. And if one church can do that, all churches can do that. And that's what resulted in Roman Catholicism. Now, got 1 minute. All right.
No, I got 4 minutes.
I got 4 whole minutes?
Well, I was just holding
my hand. Oh, well, this is good. Oh, well, go ahead. You got a comment or a question?
I was going to say that a lot of times people listen to these arguments and say, well, yeah, this is all... you know, good theoretical stuff, but the fact of the matter is that this happens all the time in congregations that are supposedly of the Lord's Church. You know, and I've mentioned this before, when my family first went to visit Zion National Park, we stayed in St. George, Utah, and there was a small congregation of the Lord's Church there. And so for Wednesday night, we thought we'd go by there. We went by there, and after Bible class, which happened to be in somebody's house somewhere, they were discussing in the kitchen of the house there the fact that they had just received a letter back from the Lord's Church in Grand Junction, Colorado,
saying that the elders there at Grand Junction couldn't take on the duties of being their sponsoring eldership for the St. George Church because they just had too much to do. That church in St. George was willing to give up its entire autonomy to another congregation 360 miles away because that congregation had elders and they didn't.
I wish sometimes it were possible for some of you who are younger to have access to, and maybe I just need to pull some of the files if you're interested and let you see, some of these appeals and how strongly these appeals are made from one local church to exercise authority over many local churches for one purpose or another. And maybe because we are in some ways isolated from where some of these things began, we don't see that as a reality. But it is a reality, and we need to send flags up when we begin to hear something such as that. I've got some things actually presently in my waist can where some of these kind of appeals are being made. And so this is not just theory. There's a practical application to some of these things. And what I want you to do is to know these passages. So when something is brought up that sounds a bit fishy, it will sound fishy to you because you know what the book says. And if someone brings something up that is fishy to you, the flag ought to go up because you've studied what the book says and it's not there. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
That's the key. Now you can't do that if you don't know what the book says, and that's what scares me to death. For someone to be brought up, as it were, quote unquote, in this congregation, and then get married and move off somewhere and get involved in a mess because we didn't teach on it. I want you to know. I want you to see the illustrations so that when something comes up that's even remotely similar to it, the flag will go up and you'll study these things and know what's right.
If you're not familiar with the standard, you can't perceive a deviation from the standard.
No. No, these things, Joey, didn't happen just all of a sudden like, boom, we're going to have a Catholic church. No, these sponsoring arrangement things, they didn't happen by saying, boom, we're going to oversee everybody else's work. It began gradually, point by point, church by church, and so forth, until now we've got full-blown denominationalism. And if you don't think it happens within the large church, you need to ask yourself the question, historically, where did the Catholic church come from? Now, I asked a preacher some of those very things. Where did he think the Catholic Church came from? He said, we can support these things because, you see, these are our brethren and we can trust our brethren. Really?
Well, another misconception is that when there is a small deviation from the truth, a lot of people want to think, well, it's no big deal because that's just a small thing. Well, the problem is that over long periods of time, a little bit of error propagates into a larger and larger and larger error. It's like trying to, you know, point a light at the or say some distant planet. And if your aim is just a little bit off, if your navigation system is just a hair off, by the time you get all the way out there, you're going to miss the planet by tens of thousands,
right,
hundreds of thousands of miles.
That's right.
So just a little bit of error over a long time propagates into a huge error.
Yeah. You're one of the mathematicians in the family. How many drips would it have to drip at a certain rate of speed to run over a 52-gallon drum? Drip by drip. Well, that's not much.
Yeah.
But over a period of time, you got the drum full. Now, that's how that works. Carolyn?
The biblical way that's put is a little leaven spoils the whole leaven.
I believe that's the illustration, yes. A little leaven.
Mm-hmm.
A little leaven goes a long way. Next time, we're going to be examining this question. Now, there's some relevance to this. Churches are dividing all over the country on this very thing. There's been a thing circulating around among preachers on the computer, on some of these lists, where this very question is being asked. And some are saying, well, examples, therefore, just aren't binding at all. The only way we know what God wants us to do is if He has given us a direct statement or a commandment. Now, I want you to think about where that runs. You might even study Acts 20 just a little bit to see where that runs. Sure. The very question I just asked?
Yeah,
the question we're going to be studying next time is, when is a New Testament example binding? And as I said, there are those who say that it is not binding. So all we have to have is a commandment. In the absence of an example, we can do what we want to. Or in the absence of a command, we can do what we want to. Okay.